This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here, live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Hawaii has proposed a loot box regulation for games. Joining me to explain how government regulations may affect the video game industry is preview and reviews editor at EGM Now, Ray Carcello. Thanks for joining me, Ray.
Thanks for having me, Mason.
So Hawaii, they propose a loot box regulation. Do you think that's a good idea, or should, you know, the video game industry just start jumping on things now before there's any laws?
Well, I definitely think that it's a, it makes sense because in a way loot boxes, at least in their current form and the way that EA and certain other companies do it, it is a form of gambling. And so I understand why people are trying to, make people aware of this particular problem. I mean, the ESRB actually just announced that they are going to be adding that now if there are microtransactions and loot crates to a game's rating, so that parents and other people are aware that games now feature increased in-game purchases. You know, it's just, you know, so you have the government's pushing from one way, and obviously the gaming industry is trying to push from the other, because I think it's just a matter of making people aware. I think it's making sure that people are smart about these situations, because it's not like, you know, obviously gambling is a problem, but you can't stop somebody from going to Vegas. You can't stop somebody from potentially gambling their savings away. At the end of the day, people still have the agency to control themselves and whatnot. So I think that, you know, it's not necessary for government to step in too much beyond, as long as video games continue to understand and realize the issue of the problem that they have now created for themselves. And I think the ESRB stating that they're going to now add this to the box on all video games digitally and physically is a good step in the first direction to hopefully prevent too much regulation from coming in, but also making people aware of a very dangerous problem in games.
Now, with Hawaii, their proposal is specifically, I think, loot boxes. But the ESRB, they want to also add in, like, hey, we're going to talk about loot boxes, but also the microtransactions. Do you think that's a good thing? I mean, I know microtransactions. I mean, those are the for some game developers, that's like the biggest moneymaker right there. I mean, is that something that they want to show, like, hey, guys, this is where we're getting all our money, and we're going to tell people that too, like, hey, you shouldn't buy it because of it?
I think that it's gotten to the point where transparency is necessary, and that transparency is a good thing. I mean, it's already come out that companies like Activision and EA are making half their annual profits off of microtransaction, and it's why their games are made the way they are. I think it's a good thing that, I mean, yes, that for sure that all Hawaii's put forward is loot crates, but I think that it's good that video games are getting out in front ahead of this, again, to prevent any possible further regulation or potentially passing, is to be like, look, this is all going to get categorized under one thing. It's loot crates, microtransactions, DLC. If you have to, if you can potentially pay money post launch or post purchase, post that $60 or $20, $30, $40 purchase of a game, it has to go on the box. The consumer has to be made as aware as possible, so that then really the gaming industry is just covering their butt. I mean, again, you can't stop somebody from going to Vegas and gambling their savings away, but you can make them as aware as possible that gambling can be addictive, gambling can be an issue, and that you need to be aware of these things before you go and you put down your money, start putting $100 in a slot machine, or $20 down on blackjack or whatever it may be, or, you know, on red on the roulette table. You know, it's the same thing. If the video game industry can make the consumer as educated as possible, that is a good thing. An educated consumer is a protected consumer. At the end of the day, people are going to still make the decisions they want to make, but they should, hopefully are making more informed decisions.
You know, I'm glad you said about being more informed, because to me, I think it's going to actually be a bit of a backfire. Yes, there's going to be transparency. Yes, they're going to, you know, consumers going to know, but you're also going to realize that you're paying, hey, $59.99 for a game that's technically not complete, and I'm going to have to dish out another $50 to get a complete game. You don't think that's going to bite the gaming industry in the butt?
I mean, it could. I mean, again, if the consumer is the smartest consumer, will understand that most of that stuff, most of that post-launch stuff is optional. You know, I mean, like, almost all of it is optional. So, I mean, as long as people understand it's, you know, again, it's like pre-orders, premium packages, and all this other stuff. Like, this is the option. You don't have to spend all this extra money on this stuff. And I think that as long as the people are aware of this, if anything, I think it might only hurt the companies, because I think people will be spending less money post-launch because they're aware that it's not everything that it's cracked up to be. Again, we've talked about this before, I believe, is that I think the only thing really what the video game industry really should do is raise video games as a whole across the board by $10 and stop putting microtransactions in games. I think that would help offset a lot of the costs, and I mean, that's my opinion on it. I think of people, at this point, there hasn't been a video game price raise in over 20 years. I think if the price of games went up a little bit, like the price of movies and the price of everything else, but you didn't have all this post-launch garbage, I think an educated consumer would be okay with that.
Do you think that the ESRB and the gaming industry in whole will be able to kind of straighten up a bit, and that way it will kind of be like Hawaii may back off a bit and say, okay, we see you guys are trying. Do you think they caught it just in time, or you think it's too late?
You know what I think? I mean, time will tell, but I think that I think they caught it in time, honestly. I mean, it's close. It was real close. The fact that Hawaii even put forward legislation shows how close this was to possibly getting worse. But I think that this issue has become big enough, and that people are aware of it enough, that the video game industry and the ESA, the ESRB, and all the other governing bodies in games, AIAS, everybody's going to come together and really try to work hard to educate the consumer as much as possible on microtransactions, on what's going on in the gaming industry, and hopefully by doing so, we'll curb any further efforts by the government to kind of to meddle with something that really none of them understand.
I'm glad about you saying like some of these guys just don't understand the games. Recently, it's been coming up in a lot of opinionated articles that video games are a bit too violent these days. What do you think of that?
I think this is an argument we've been having for 30 years, and it's a bunch of garbage. It's a bunch of BS. I think it's just whenever a politician doesn't want to actually go to the root of a real issue, they attack something they don't understand. It's a very common political tactic, especially for Republicans who tend to be, you know, no matter what science or what facts you put in their face, they all go fake news. They all put their head in their sands, and their head up their butts are actually more apropos, and are basically just like, oh, what can we attack that enough people don't understand out there, and we can get away with it? Because in America, one out of every six people are consider themselves a gamer. That means five out of every six don't. So we'll say, oh, we'll say video games. We'll say video games. We'll do it. We've been doing it for 30 years. We've been talking about video games as a potential scapegoat for violence and increased violence amongst the populace, and not lax gun laws, and not lax mental health issues, and not populating prisons and turning privatizing prisons and trying to make prisons into a money factory for CEOs. We don't talk about that stuff. No, let's talk about video games. Let's talk about movies. Let's talk about the stuff that actually has been proven, scientifically proven, has the exact opposite effect. It makes people more docile and less violent because it gives them an outlet for whatever frustrations may be occurring over the course of their day-to-day lives and expressing themselves through art. Let's ignore all the hundreds of studies that have come out and pointed us that way, and let's look and let's just pull something from the sky all willy-nilly like we've been doing for 30 years, and a bunch of stupid Southern Republicans just eat it all up.
It's funny you said 30 years, because I thought of Mortal Kombat, and I think that's a 30-year-old game right there. Did you remember the big deal about the blood?
25 years, actually.
Really? 35?
25.
Okay, whew. Whew, I was going to feel really old then. No, but I remember when it came out, it was the blood. And my mother, she wouldn't let me play it because she's like, oh, it has blood in there. And I remember the guy at the video game store or the movie store, I forgot where we were at. And he said, no, you need to put the code in. And then she walked away thinking about it. And he was like, I'll give you the code. But that was a big deal then, too, was like, hey, you're going to have realistic blood with realistic characters. And next thing you know, your kids are going to be sacrificing animals and, you know, killing all these people. And I haven't done any of that stuff.
No, exactly. I mean, I think that we've all, I think most, everybody I know has benefited from video games in some way or another. And even if you're not in the video game industry, people look at it, it's an escape. It's just like movies or television or comic books or anything else. I mean, before video games, it was comic books. Before, you know, before that, it was television. It was always something that when people don't understand why other people act a certain way, then they just point to the media. They point to what they don't know, and they just try and cast blame on it. And it's just the same old song and dance. And trust me, when this blows over, as it always does, it'll just come around again in a few more years. We'll have more evidence to prove the contrary, and yet there will still be some stupid idiot who's like 75 years old who doesn't understand, you know, his joystick from his elbow, and will blame the video games because of some other terrible tragedy instead of actually pointing the blame where it belongs.
I don't know. Let me be the devil's advocate for a little bit, because you know there are a couple games that just have like just really gory stuff. And I think of some, actually, it's a PlayStation 2 game. I think Manhunt, do you remember that one?
Yes.
Was really gory. You got, you know, Friday the 13th. You got all this other weird, crazy stuff out there. I mean, you don't think that affects anybody?
No, I mean, you just said Friday the 13th. That's based off a movie franchise. I mean, it's been happening in media for years. I mean, if you label a game as too violent, then you have to label a movie as too violent, and you have to label a book as too violent. And at what point does it stop? It's art, it's freedom of expression, and at the end of the day, most people understand that what's on the television screen in front of them is not real.
That's true. I will admit that. It's some fantasy and reality stuff you need to probably teach yourself or your kids or somebody, because I don't think you could think any of this stuff was real, but who knows?
And again, I mean, and if you do think it's real, then it goes back to the mental health issue. You need help. You don't need to blame the video games. You need to go find a psychiatrist.
Well, that's a good point. You're right about that. Mental health is a very important thing. And, you know, that's something that I've always tell people, like, hey, if you don't feel good, just, you know, you don't have to tell anybody if you don't want to, but go see somebody. It's sometimes nicer to talk about it, right?
It's all anonymous, typically for a reason. Doctor-patient privilege. I mean, I personally have never gone, but I know friends who have. I mean, look, folks, just get help. Don't look. You know, don't bury your problems.
we're gonna jump to a new topic because that one is like a mouthful, right? It's like you could probably talk like a full hour on that stuff. But in the month of February, we had in February, we had a couple games that were a bunch of remakes. You know, Shadow of the Colossus came out, I don't think in February, and Secret of Mana remake came out. A lot of people said the game wasn't that good. What did you think about Secret of Mana?
Oh, Secret of Mana was terrible. Secret of Mana was one of the most disappointing remakes I think I've ever seen. That it kind of shows that this was definitely a game that we were looking back on fondly through rose-colored glasses, because RPGs and JRPGs have come so far over the past 25 years, and Secret of Mana, even with its new coat, the new coat of paint that they put on it, has not aged that well at all. Its systems are broken and archaic, and it's just absolutely a shame that this was a way to show people, hey, guess what? One of your favorite games from your childhood, not that good after all.
Now, I heard that some of the voice acting, it was just unnecessary, and like the graphics were really crappy. Was that true, or is those just rumors? Because I didn't have the pleasure of playing this game.
The voice acting wasn't great. It's not the worst I've heard, but it definitely wasn't great, and definitely felt unnecessary to have every NPC talk. I think the graphics were okay. They kind of chibi-fied everything a little bit, you know, and there was bright colors and whatnot. I mean, I think you can get away with a little bit more stuff with the 16-bit sprites back in the day, but it wasn't the worst upgrade. I think really what was terrible about it was from a technical standpoint, there was just a lot of old systems, and you could see the aged hardware that this was built on top of, and that this was a game engine that really needed to be built from the ground up, and rebuilt from the ground up, I should say, and given you know, the love and care it deserves, and given a lot more modern attention, because I think the graphics and voice acting weren't weren't bad. It was just really everything underneath the surface was just, you realized how far we've come and how old and broken that game now is.
Now, how long did it take Square Enix to remake this game? Was it like a year, or is this like 8 months and you can tell?
You know, it feels like this was like a 6 to 12 month project, probably 6 to 9 months, really, because nothing from the game has changed except for the visuals. And it's not like they did with Shadow of the Colossus, where they painstakingly, like, completely redid everything. This was just like a coat of paint on top of a falling apart house. And I wonder if also it just wasn't a chance for them to capitalize on some of the retro goodness that people had been feeling with the NES and SNES Classic, which had, of course, had the 16-bit Secret of Mana on it. And it makes me wonder if that also wasn't part of it. They knew that was coming for the Super Nintendo Classic. I wonder if that's part of the reason why they didn't kind of go forward with this, to kind of be like, hey, we can bang for our buck if we upgrade it and put it on a PlayStation systems, and we can get possibly two groups of old school fans who might want to play this. But I would say this, play the Super Nintendo version. The Super Nintendo version is actually the better version right now.
Yeah, I like playing the Super Nintendo versions anyways. And speaking of Secret of Mana, I've been playing Secret of Evermore. And the first time playing it, I love this game so far. Did you've heard of Secret of Evermore or no?
I've heard of it, but I've never played it.
Yeah, it was supposed to be part of the family of Secret of Mana. I don't really know much of the history. I hope I got that part right. But it had Secret of, and I was like, I got to try it.
It's kind of similar. It's kind of like how I am with, I prefer like Tales of series, which of course is Bandai Namco.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of I'm a sucker for that. Like whenever, like from Tales of Destiny up to Tales of Vesperia and of Tales of Zillia and Berseria and Zestaria and crazy weird names, but they're all in the Tales series.
You know, I wanted to ask, how long does it usually take to remake a game? I mean, like if you're doing something like Shadow of Colossus, where it's from the ground up. Or like Secret of Mana, just like you said, like throwing paint on it. That was, you said, 6 to 12 months. So what would Shadow of Colossus be?
I can imagine Shadow of Colossus might have taken a little bit longer. Probably could have been close to a full 2 year dev cycle, but probably more like 18 months. Because again, the systems were there, everything was there. It was just it's how much work do you want to put into it? Secret of Mana had new music, new voice acting, new graphics. But that's only a 6 to 9 month job, really. So on top of that, they only made a couple other minor tweaks. So maybe, I mean, maximum 12 months was probably took Secret of Mana, whereas Shadow of Colossus put a lot more work into it. So that's probably more like a year and a half to 2 years.
Now, one of the remakes I keep thinking of, and I can't help it because it's one of my favorite games, is Final Fantasy VII. They've been teasing this for years, man. So this is going to be like a ground-up remastered. It must be beautiful, right? It's because it's like 5 years in the making.
I hope so. I mean, Square Enix Japan has to get their act together. They put out a couple duds lately, and if they destroy another great classic, I think the fan base might revolt, and you might see Square Enix split right down the middle.
I hear you on that. For March, is there going to be any cool games coming out, or is it going to be like a dead month?
Yeah, you know, March is, things are going to start picking up around mid-March. You got the new Kirby coming out, Kirby Star Allies for the Switch, which is going to be a lot of fun. It's got 4-player local co-op. Got a lot of Kirby Superstar from the SNES kind of feel to it. You've got Ni No Kuni 2 from Bandai Namco, which of course is the Studio Ghibli art style, basically like a Tales of whatever JRPG in terms of that epicness, usually about 60 to 70 hour experience. March is going to have, you're going to have some really good games coming out in March. But those are two in particular that I'm looking forward to.
Oh man, Ni No Kuni 2. I love the first one. That was such a cute game, and I got a little teary towards the end. But I haven't heard too much about this one. Have you heard anything?
Yeah, I mean it's going to basically be like a whole new cast, a whole new set of characters, but it's going to be very similar in terms, just much like the Tales series. If it's like Bandai Namco, there will be a couple of threads that will connect them, but not in such an overt way, a way that if you're new to the franchise, that you can't enjoy Ni No Kuni 2 if you didn't play the first one.
Okay, so it can act as a standalone, which is kind of nice. I also heard that there's going to be a Devil May Cry HD collection. You know, there's been so many. Why'd they have to do another one?
You know what? That's a great question. I hope it's because that we're going to get more Devil May Cry at some point. Because that's very much Capcom's MO now, is where they'll remake something, kind of like they did with Mega Man or Street Fighter or something, and then they'll polish everything up and see how the fan base reacts, or DuckTales or the Disney collection, and then they'll make something new, right? So I think this is them testing the waters to see if Devil May Cry is still a viable franchise, because like you said, they just did a Devil May Cry collection on Xbox 360 and PS3. But it makes me wonder, and then we got DMC, I believe, after that. It makes me wonder if they're not testing the waters to see if they should go forward with another brand new Devil May Cry, and are using this as like a listener's test.
Well, Ray, thanks so much for joining me. For those listening, where can they find you at?
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all at Ray Carcillo. And of course, you can read my stuff at egmnow.com, where I'm Reviews Previews Editor. I just put up a review today for a brand new PlayStation VR game called Moss, so you guys can check that out.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapaine.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.